Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate Show. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here. On this show, our goal is to make you a more educated real estate investor and using all means necessary to help you build your portfolio of cash flowing rental properties. And it, you know, we talk about the self-directed IRA. We talk about, borrowing from your 401k. We talk about all manner of getting financing. But one thing maybe you've not ever thought about before is becoming your own bank. The idea of infinite banking. We get this question from time to time on this show, and it's a really powerful strategy. So we thought we would have on an expert in this, who is Nate Scott. He is the president of livingwealth.com, and he knows all about becoming your own banker. And it's been a few years since we had a chance to talk, and we thought great time to have Nate back on the show, as so many people could learn from this idea of infinite banking and becoming your own banker. Nate, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Clayton. Yeah, it's great to be back.
So, okay, now we are in, 2022, 2023 timeframe for real estate investors. First of all, just give us the high level here. Like, what is infinite banking? How can you become your own bank, become your own banker? And actually, what do you think has changed since we've last spoken about this topic? It can be a complicated topic, and why I think you guys do such a great job at livingwealth.com is that you're able to make it accessible to people. So can you kind of show me where we are, sort of state of play in 2022, 2023 right now?
Yeah. Well, the powerful thing about infinite banking is it has worked the same for the past 150 years. And that's one of the things we love about it, is that it's, people have been doing this. These insurance companies have been around with these policies. So I guess we could dive into what it is. I kind of took that for granted possibly with your audience, but the infinite banking concept itself is using specifically designed whole life insurance policies based for cash value to finance things of life. And one of the most common things you'll find is that there's kind of a union or a marriage with infinite banking and real estate investors, where real estate investors need capital and they're constantly building capital up and deploying capital and building it back up and deploying capital. And that's the concept of banking. Just 101 is the idea that everyone in any business or any investment industry needs capital. They have to store it. They have to deploy it. It has to be restored, redeployed. And right now, and has been for the case for a very long time, banks are quite a lousy place to move money around in. They're very lousy. They don't pay any interest. It's mainly a convenience. That's what we're doing. We're putting money in for the safety, liquidity, and convenience that banks offer.
And
the problem is they don't actually make any money.
Yeah, and in Europe, you have negative interest rates. In the United States, in the United States, you're lucky if you had 0.01% interest. So you're losing money every day that you have money in a bank in the United States.
Right.
And in Europe, you're actually paying them to hold your money. So convenience is really the only reason you're using it, right?
That has to be it. Convenience, protection, all these different things. And we can maybe argue about what the state of banking is and how safe it really is and whether the FDIC actually has the capability to prevent mass bank losses and so forth. But that's a different story, a different time. essentially where we can go with this is there. It's almost a necessary evil, the idea of banking. So, like Clayton, for you and your audience, I mean, you're encouraging them. Hey, banks are don't store up money in banks. You have the Robert Kiyosaki group. Savers are losers. We really would agree with this, but yet, no matter where you're at, you find yourself having money in the bank. And that's kind of the barometer of success. And to be able to invest money in real estate, to be able to invest money and do different things, a lot of times money has to be accumulated in some place and then deployed from that place and then reaccumulated. I think a lot of people would agree they don't want money in the bank, but just by the nature of success, that's what ends up happening, is we end up having cash due to all the cash flow from your rental properties that are being produced and just from possibly working a high paying job or owning a business and so forth. And cash is coming in and we're just always trying to find places to put it. And so the entire flow of money, the banking idea, is just not profitable. And we know it's not. So there's strategies out there, one of them being the infinite banking concept, of course, one that we promote as a way to essentially achieve the same things that you want to achieve anyway, but do it in more profitably by changing how the banking side works, which is mainly the capital accumulation and deployment process, which is, that's just banking in general. We also like to say banking is, it's going to exist in the world. It's not, it's going to happen whether we end up in a cryptocurrency world or
right.
No matter what, the flow of money in this and the storage of money, the accumulation of capital and the deployment of capital is a necessary part of life. And so we're trying to find a way. Is there a way to operate in a more profitable way? And as you brought up, Clayton, is there any difference, I was last on your show maybe 4 or 5 years ago compared to today, the process has been working the same way for centuries. I mean, really since the 1800s. And we could talk a little bit about that, as far as
the
marketing of it.
Yeah, let's talk about the mechanics of it. So that's great to know. So really nothing has changed. So I like that stability of a financial product, right? That nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Even as we head into this, like maybe we'll have a decentralized currency, cryptocurrency, we'll move to a more of a digital currency. Who knows what's coming from these central banks? But still, at the end of the day, this is a mechanism, a financial product that has sustained the test of time. So let's talk about the mechanics of this. How does somebody set up one of these accounts? And what do they need to do in order to sort of qualify that process? Where would a person start? What would they need to get in order before they start this process?
Yeah, well, it's true. With infinite banking, you have to fund the bank, of course. And so money's got to come from someplace. Normally, there's only two places. I mean, for everybody, you either have cash flow that you can contribute towards it, or you have existing assets, I mean, existing pools of money in various places. And so you kind of carve out some money to fund the bank, but we really don't even consider it carving out. I would say, I don't know if I would even use that term, because most people, as soon as they fund the policy with whatever they want to fund it with, put money into the bank, they're just immediately going to redeploy it. In a very soon chance. So in other words, it's more of like the flow through is really what it is. It's the central hub. So we have cash flow coming in or existing cash on one hand. We move it into a policy and then we deploy capital from that. And there's not really a waiting time. So the first thing for everyone when they want to get started is, of course, it's not really the best solution for someone who's really struggling just to get by. Maybe they're just starting their own business. Maybe they're just starting out. Maybe they're just listening to your show and trying to get a level of success. Not that they can't, they can start, anybody can start anywhere they want, but a couple of things have to be, you really probably want your financial life in order whenever you get moving in that direction, I would
say.
So
having some capital to start with. So let's say we had $50,000, $100,000 to start with. Okay, we're going to start and we're going to become our own bank. So we open up, and it's a whole life insurance policy, correct?
That's right.
So a whole life insurance policy. And then what are some of the pieces that are then constructed around that? So you mentioned the cash coming in. Is that like a normal flowing process, like that cash coming in? Could it, we're sort of storing our extra capital in this account as well? Like, so maybe income from rental properties or business income, would it also flow into this account? Or are we sort of sitting then on that 100,000 and it we're never increasing it beyond that?
Well, the goal would be to increase it, of course. Okay. Yeah. So I've never met someone who has too much money. The goal would be to continually contribute to it at some level. But there is going to be a lot of leeway, whether you kind of supercharge it up front with some money. You don't even have to do it that way. You could just start putting money in monthly. You could start putting money in just as lump sums every year. But yeah, I mean, that would really be what you would do, Clayton. You would take, so right now, if you have, you know, people you're working with and they're investing in, you know, passive real estate investments and receiving cash flow, I would assume this is how it normally plays out for most people. They're going to take this cash flow and store it up until they have enough cash flow to go purchase another property. I would assume that's kind of almost what it has to be. So in other words, and maybe they can do it quickly, but I would ask you, Clayton, to, if you want to give us a, kind of an example of how it would work. What if they were going to work with you, about how much money are they having to put into a deal to buy a new rental home through your team?
Yeah. So like at our company at Morris Invest, what they would do is the minimum down payment on a property for one of our new construction rental properties is going to be about 45 to 50,000, right? And we have different price ranges on our, whether it's a single family or duplex. So it, price range will vary, but that's about the minimum amount. So they would put down about 45 to 50,000 with bank financing for the rest.
That's right.
Or that's self-directed IRA or 401k, you know, other method there. So is that a good frame of reference?
That's exactly right. So we're going to target, you know, $50,000, you know, actual investment. And then of course with bank financing, well, once you deploy your 50,000, the goal would be to be able to buy another one.
Right.
And we're going to have to get the money to get another one. And we're going to have to build that up someplace. And it's going to, that money is going to be built up through some means. Oftentimes it's they're working and earning money and are putting some money aside to deploy. And then obviously getting passive cash flow from their existing, you know, real estate investments they've made. And this is just how it works. And so the idea would be, like you brought up, Clayton, let's say we put in 100,000 of capital we already have, and we use that to fund a policy. And we put that money in, and we immediately borrow some of that out from the policy to go deploy into a property. Well, the goal would be that's not the end of your financial life. So that property should be spitting out cash flow. You still should be earning money by, I mean, if you still have, if you're still, you know, employed or, you know, a business owner, different things. And so cash flow is coming in, and we'd like to buy another home and another home, another home. So absolutely, we're going to need more capital than just that one time. You could do it one time. I'm just saying that would be kind of rare. Normally you'd hope to be able to continue to put more money into the bank and redeploy it. And we're just really cycling money through the policy. And the reason why it's more profitable than just simply doing that same thing through a checking account is obviously the checking account doesn't pay anything. Right. So it's just a zero-sum game. We put money in, we take it out, we put it in, we take it out, and we're always just left with what we've contributed. We'd like to get into a place that's earning compound interest, i.e. a policy. Even while we're leveraging it out, it's continuing to grow the entire time on the full balance. And so as we're putting money in and taking out, putting money in, we're constantly compounding the entire capital base. So, I mean, that's a nutshell. That's what it would be. So we would, you know, buy a property or two, let's say, as an idea, and then cash flow would be coming back in. We'd start putting it back into policy, and we'd wait until we have another 50 to 100,000 and we'd go redeploy it. And then we'd build it back up and redeploy it. And so normally you would not just do a one time. Normally you'd want to continue to contribute.
So you're really setting, and I mean, we've heard stories of billionaires creating basically their own insurance companies to be able to do this, right? To be able to construct like what the Rockefellers, right? So that Yeah. I think if I'm getting my billionaires mixed up, but the idea is, right, that they had multiple businesses, of course, and you have your oil business, right? And you have your drilling business, mm-hmm. your oil and drilling business, and you have your insurance company, and your insurance company is basically funneling. So it basically keeps you from paying taxes. Yeah. You're funneling the money through it. You're able to then use the insurance company, quote, an infinite bank, to fund the purchase of the drilling operation, i.e. real estate investing, right? I mean, that's the idea here.
That's right. That's right. So in the world of business, the goal is to create synergy. Mm-hmm. And for these really big businesses, they're creating synergy. So they're trying to create what other business can we venture into that can complement the business we're already in? And so we can have a captive customer and we can complement each other, one operating company with a financing company. So if we have an operating company and we can fund all of its operations with our finance company, our bank,
right,
then we're in good shape. And it happens to be, you're right, that a lot of like a Warren Buffett and these different types of individuals, it's better than what we could do. So instead of buying an insurance policy to work as synergy to finance the things that they're doing, they just buy the whole insurance company, right. and then they use the insurance company to fund it. But that the next best thing is just to use the insurance policies from the insurance companies to do that. So if you can't buy the insurance company, then that's the next best thing is to fund the policy, and it works as a complement to your other businesses. That's the whole goal. So its main goal is to be the financing company for the business or investment ventures that you're in the same way you brought up with the billionaires of the world. They say, well, we need to finance all these ventures.
Right.
What entity, what institution can I buy that I could plug all this capital in and then use that capital to fund the ventures? And it happens to be they choose insurance companies quite often. And there's a slew of reasons for that, but maybe beyond the scope of this call, but that you're exactly right. So that we're trying to mimic what they're doing, but on a scale that we can actually tap into, an average individual, not a uber wealthy.
And I'm not a tax expert, and I don't play one on television, but I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, but then that initial, and I'm just using 100,000 as an example, but that initial funding of this account as my own bank, that 100,000. Is that, how does that play? I mean, is that a tax expense? Is that a tax write-off for your business because you're basically creating this policy? Does that, how does that play into it?
Yeah, good question. The premiums you contribute are not a tax deduction. They're not an expense. The cash value that accumulates in the account accumulates tax-free and can be used tax-free. So it's more of like a Roth type of scenario. You're not getting an expense to contribute, but you're not having to pay tax on any of the gains in the policy.
Gotcha.
And so how you can create expenses, though, is when you borrow from the policy to, let's say, fund a business venture or to make an investment, the interest the business pays back to the policy is an expense, just as if it had borrowed the money from anywhere else. And it creates something that's really pretty unique. And what I mean by that is you have a compounding asset that is accumulating interest and dividends tax-free inside of the policy, the cash value. And while on the other hand, you're leveraging it out and paying interest that's deductible back to it. So it's a unique situation where you are getting to expense something and actually essentially still keeping the money
inside
of the cash value without having to pay tax on it.
Sorry to interrupt you. Yeah, that's a great point. So, okay, you don't get the tax benefit up front, but you're getting the tax benefit long term because it's able to grow tax-free. And the beauty of a whole life insurance policy, as I understand it, is that where it doesn't have a time limit, right? It's not like a term life. So it's a whole life and you can hand it down. Then you're building up this war chest of money that you can hand down to your children, right? You can pass to your family. Even if you live over the age of 99 years old, you can pass this down, right?
That's right. That's right. And I mean, that's what we like to do. And this is why the wealthy tend to use insurance more than the middle class. they tend to use whole life insurance is really, a lot of it has to do with tax advantages and the generational wealth. I would find that most of the middle class is concerned mainly, and I don't blame us, but it's concerned mainly in what we can do for ourselves to make it.
Right.
And we think secondarily of what it means generationally. We would love to be able to leave things for our children and have them in a better shape than us, but we have to make sure that we're okay. The wealthy have, they're pretty confident that they're going to be okay. So they think more so generationally. And so they're buying quite a bit of this for that very reason, is for the tax advantages that you can accumulate capital. All of the gains are tax-free. The death benefit that passes down to the next generation upon your death, because it is insurance, is tax-free. And it can create this essentially tax-free cycle of wealth creation, where the next generation receives your tax-free death benefits that are way more than what you've contributed during your lifetime. And they use that to go open policies on themselves and use those to fund the deals and all the things that they're trying to do. And then there's another tax-free death benefit. And so there's an ever-compounded increase in capital where there's no taxation on any of the buildup. Mm. And so that's why they choose it. It's quite a powerful tool. The insurance itself, we do enjoy, but really we're focusing on, as you, I'm glad you brought it up, is this idea that we see it as synergistic. It is a complement to whatever it is we're doing, right? Which is what bank is. So a bank is not a profitable business. It's just supposed to allow me to conduct business. That's what a banking institution is.
And with high, and we see interest rates going up. So can you just speak about why the interest rate benefit of a whole, like this infinite banking policy idea makes sense too? Because you can really, I mean, from what I understand, you basically control the interest rates, right? The bank doesn't in this situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're exactly right that the interest rates that you are paying back to the policy, there will be a minimum rate that the insurance company will charge for the policy loan. So just a quick snapshot of that too. Whenever you have cash value, you are leveraging the cash value through a policy loan. So every time we take money out of the policy, quote unquote, we're not removing the capital. We're borrowing against the capital.
Just like you would in a 401k loan, as I've pointed out to people, you're not withdrawing the money from your 401k, which people can do and they get a penalty. You can borrow from your 401k up to about $50,000, but you're not actually taking money out of it. You're borrowing against what you have in the account. So that's similar then, right?
That is similar. And I would even say it's possibly even more similar to something like a home equity line of credit, a HELOC, or using a piece of property as collateral to receive a loan. And you can see, I mean, the 401k works as well, but as far as how it operates, it's exactly that way, where the value and the ability for a property to appreciate does not depend on whether there's a mortgage on the property or not. The property will appreciate regardless if you have a mortgage on it or not, and the mortgage doesn't impact its ability to appreciate in value. So if you leverage a property, you may pay interest to the bank to leverage it, but that allows the property to continue to appreciate. You could have sold the property and taken the capital, but then the property's gone. You have the capital, you don't owe a bank anything, but now you don't have the property either. And so that's the idea behind the policy as well. You actually can withdraw money, like you brought up with the 401k. You can withdraw money from cash value, but the better solution is to use the cash value as collateral for a policy loan, which is your guaranteed contractual right as a policyholder. And that allows all of the cash value to continue to grow on the full base. It doesn't matter if you have loans out or not, the entire pool of money continues to compound exactly the same way. We pay back interest, but it's true oftentimes. So interest rates right now may be 4.5% typically on a policy loan, which as you bring up is better than we can get at banks these days, which is pretty remarkable, even for low risk, you know, mortgages. But all that to be said, we can use that capital, but we may go invest in a real estate property that's producing 7-8% cash on cash cash flow. well, what are we going to do with that? If I'm paying 4.5 in interest back to the company, but I'm actually making a return of 8, well, why don't I just flow all 8 in and expense even more in interest expense? And so I can wipe out my profit on paper as to the tax man. So that may be a different strategy altogether. We don't have time maybe to hit on fully, but that is right. So you have some, how much interest you choose to repay, there's going to be a minimum, but we would encourage you to essentially put in as much as whatever it is you're doing with the money is returning. That's what we would technically say. Let's roll it all back into the bank and redeploy it from the bank. It's essentially changing your perspective from being what we call checking account centric to policy centric, where money in the policy is as good as money in a checking account. And so we use it the same way. We're treating it for the same things. And we're just trying to make a profit while we have a bank. We're going to be a part of the banking world. We might as well try to make some money in it. Doing what the rich do. You know, if you ask Warren Buffett, I bet he's got a lot of capital in the insurance company,
right?
And not in a checking account. Right. There's reasons for that. So,
no, this is so fascinating. I'm just so intrigued by this process, and it really is a next level. Like, if you want to take things to the next level, this is the way to do it, my friends. And to really be able to create generational wealth, that's what we're talking about here on the show. Nate, where can people learn more about what you guys do? I think you guys have a free course as well on your website at livingwealth.com. But where can people connect with you guys if they want to maybe take the infinite banking thing to the next level?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you can go to livingwealth.com. We have a free beginner's course. We don't really put any fluff into the course. So in other words, it's less than 2 hours. It dives right into the meat of why the concept works and how it works. If you'd like to book a time with me or one of our other advisors, you can also go to livingwealth.com/meeting, just livingwealth.com/meeting. And you can book a time with us anytime you'd like. So, but we would encourage you, if this is your first foray into it, to take the course first before you schedule the consultation. That's what we would recommend.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That way you're educated about it. We do something similar at Morris Invest. We encourage you to, you know, to see if real estate investing is right for you, go through that process before you book a call with us. That way
we don't want clients who don't really know what they're doing and what they're getting into. So don't just take one podcast episode and say, I'm an IBC expert. I'm diving in. Go ahead and take the course. We also have a free ebook that you can download as well. And so depending on which way you like to educate yourself, whether you like to read or take a course. But all that to say, we would say do that first. That way you have a much better understanding of what's happening. And you can really kind of weed yourself out. You may just say it's not for you, and that's perfectly fine. Then you wouldn't have had to have the pressure of meeting with someone on a call and having that intimidating factor. So.
Well, it's been a great pleasure connecting with you again, Nate, after all these years. Love to see that you guys are crushing it over there at Living Wealth and really helping educate people about this process. That's really great. I love to see that. So thank you.
Thanks,
Clayton. You so much. I really appreciate it. Again, go to livingwealth.com and check out the free training course there. It's about 2 hours long, as Nate said. And if you're ready to then pull the trigger on that, you can book a free call with them. As well. We'll make sure we have that linked up in our show description so people can go there. If they're driving right now and they don't have the URL memorized, we'll make sure we have it there. Nate, thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, Clayton. Talk to you later.
And thanks to all of you for subscribing to the Investing in Real Estate podcast. We really, really appreciate it. This is what it's all about, taking your investing strategies to the next level through education. And so I love what Nate is doing, and I love what the team at Living Wealth are doing. So just education, education, education. That's what we're constantly doing. Be a lifelong learners, and you can be lifelong earners. That's my philosophy. Now, go out there, take action, everyone. Become a real estate investor. I believe it's the number one way to build wealth. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.